Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens. So are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Tal Lavin, who is the author of Culture Warlords and Wild Faith, How the Christian Right is Taking Over America. Tal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me again. Love joining my Australian comrades on the other side of the world.
Just to begin, we've seen this horrific event in Sydney over the weekend, which has produced an incredible amount of misinformation and disinformation. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about the ways that these horrible events are weaponized in the wake of them.
Yeah, coming from the US, it's where we have mass shootings every 14 seconds. It's actually having way more mass shootings in some sense makes it harder to politicize them because you can't make that big a deal out of something that happens every 5 minutes, which is dark. That's the reality of a country in a slow rolling civil war. But people will always use massive events to advance their agenda. That's how propaganda works. And particularly when it comes to using the ethnicity or origin of a shooter to then demonize whole groups, that's something that reveals much more about the person who is leveraging this sort of event than it does about any particular ethnic group. If there's one thing I can say as someone who comes from a country with a lot of endemic and constant gun violence, it's that endemic and constant gun violence is not limited to any particular ethnicity or race or socioeconomic group. It is something that happens when people who are either unstable or radicalized have access to weaponry. And that's sort of much more a human condition thing than any particular group sort of thing. You have the situation where people can use propaganda is really about people using emotion to confirm their priors, right? And this is a situation where people are emotionally keyed up. There's a lot of grief. There's a lot of anger. There's a sense of a safe place being violated. And so people, particularly people with a xenophobic agenda, are going to try to capitalize on this kind of opportunity and make generalizations that are needless to say, to this audience at least, not only grossly inappropriate, but just inaccurate, harmful, all those things.
At the same time as the right have been trying to weaponize this for various anti-immigration sentiments, I'm also seeing on the left a bit of unfortunate conspiracy theorizing about the origins of the shooters, trying to desperately make it some sort of false flag, which is very disappointing to see. But some of the material that's being used to back this up, I feel is just AI slop, and very obviously AI slop. Seems in days gone by we had a higher class of anti-Semitic hoax, but then what is the protocols of the Elders of Zion? But just by slop of its day, they took a French satire about people plotting to rule the world and copy-pasted the word Jew into it.
Yeah, I know. Anti-Semitism doesn't have to be clever. It just has to exist for people to believe in it, unfortunately. I'll say this, as a Jew, right, waking up to that news, right, it's awful. It makes you feel frightened and vulnerable, and particularly on Hanukkah, there's a tradition where we put our menorahs in the window, and it's called Pirsume Nisa, proclaiming the miracle or promulgating the miracle, letting everyone know, hey, a miracle happened, yay. And you publicize it, you put it in your window. And to me, this year, there was that frisson of, okay, I am going to put my menorah straight in the window. No faffing around, it's going right on the ledge. And because I'm proud to be a Jew, and also, even with that sort of defiant pride, there's that sense where you're, wow, people really want to kill people like me just for being who we are. And especially because so often I find particularly, I find it, frankly, in transpartisan context, because anti-Semitism is transpartisan, I find that anti-Semitism seems to have two settings, which is shut up, you're overreacting, and mass murder. People do use accusations of anti-Semitism in bad faith, but people also go out and murder Jews for being Jewish on the beach on a holiday. So you live with these dual conflicting realities. I think there's also an unfortunate tendency, including from the asshole Bibi Netanyahu, to make this about Israel, make this about Zionism. And that really pisses me off. No, these are Australian Jews. There's no king of the Jews. Bibi Netanyahu isn't the king of the Jews. Neither was Jesus. We don't have one. That's our thing. There's no central authority here. We all just, and blaming exilic Jewish communities for things that have happened in Israel and Palestine is really messed up. We have our own separate existence, traditions. It's not right and it's not fair. And whenever I see it in a leftist environment, it makes me really angry.
Tal, I understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu actually, in response to the actions of the man who intervened and disarmed one of the attackers, proclaimed him to be a Jewish man, and he wasn't. But I'm wondering, what's the state of discourse around anti-Semitism in the United States at present?
Oh, God. At the moment, they're like, how much anti-Semitism is too much? And the Republican Party is maybe more than we've had in the past. It's not great. It's very uncomfortable being a Jew in the U.S. right now. Probably better than it's been to be a Jew at various places in the past, or to be a member of various ethnic minorities in the U.S. right now, but still deeply uncomfortable and upsetting. I find that I'm happier when nobody's talking about us, but that never happens. Leave us alone. We just want to light candles and not be Christian. But yeah, no, the current U.S. discourse with Nick Fuentes going on Tucker Carlson's show and just more and more open, proud anti-Semitism making its way into mainstream discourse. How, not so much who goes Nazi, as how Nazi can we go? And it's very, I hate to overuse the word upsetting, but I don't get it. I feel I'm always watching the news with one eye peeked over my shoulder, and I never enjoy that sensation. When was the best time to run, and why was it 2 years ago or something? Not to mention that I'm trans too, so that just makes it extra super fun.
Well, in response to the shooting here, there's been a number of public figures who've expressed the view that this horrific event is attributable to, in some way, shape or form, the pro-Palestinian solidarity movement. I'm wondering if you can speak to the ways in which anti-Semitism is deployed in this context, but also, I suppose, in terms of its longer historical trajectory. What's the association between anti-Semitism and, say, peoples in the Middle East and North Africa?
Gosh, you're hitting me with the easy questions, huh? Cool. Opine on something delicate and fragile. No, I have a few things to say. First of all, I think it's overall that accusation is bullshit. There's been a ton of worldwide activism in support of Palestine, which has been completely justified, in my opinion, which has not been in any way violent. And telling people they can't comment on human rights abuses in front of their faces or it's anti-Semitic is insulting in and of itself to me. And it seems as if these shooters were affiliated with the Islamic State, which is obviously a completely distinct ideology from the Palestine Solidarity Movement. And also, I think, you know, nothing about what I've seen from the Palestine Solidarity Movement in New York, in Australia, around the world, suggests that murdering 10-year-olds and grandparents on the beach is their modus operandi. That's the modus operandi of terrorism, which is what we've seen here. Making Jews afraid to be visibly Jewish in Australia is not going to help Palestinians in Palestine. That's just not how anything works. And I think both the attackers and anyone who isn't being an asshole trying to use this horrific event for their own purposes can see that clearly. There is a historical, there's a certain historical tradition of anti-Semitism in the Muslim world, but it's actually not as old or embedded as you might think. It is extant, but actually it is extant. The way it came to the Middle East was on the back of European colonization, specifically British colonization. Anti-Semitism in its modern form, where we're talking about conspiracies, where we're using the protocols of the Elders of Zion, where we're talking about Jewish world control, that is a European tradition. And whereas older modalities of Muslim-Jewish interactions in the Middle East there's a long tradition of that, and it was sort of like a second-class citizenship, but like in fairly tolerated. There's a long and vibrant history of Middle Eastern Jews living without dealing with tons of pogroms and random seasonal murder sprees like Jews in Europe. The advent of sort of European-style eliminationist anti-Semitism is a much more recent phenomenon and has a lot to do with the advent of Israel and Israeli territorial encroachments and security states and Western involvement, lots of stuff. It's big, it's complicated. And I am not downplaying it in the least, because what we're talking about is really old, entrenched, vibrant communities, the Jews of Yemen, the Jews of Tunisia, uprooting themselves completely and leaving. You know, these are really old traditions and centuries old, with their own prayers, their own food, their own kind of, again, just really vibrant extant culture being essentially eliminated by the advent of this imported European style anti-Semitism. I guess my point is, yes, it exists. It has existed for a long time. I'm not a fan of anti-Semitism in any context, but it is, I think, worth noting that there is a very long history of Jews in these regions, just as long as, if not longer, than Jews in Europe.
Just more things we can thank the British for.
Yeah. I don't think the Brits get enough flack in the Israel-Palestine situation. The way that went down initially actually has a lot in common with the absolute horrific fiasco that was the British partition of India. Like, there is just, the Brits had this let's leave them a mess modus operandi that very much was in operation with regards to Israel and Palestine. So that's just something to think about while we're being mad about imperialism anyway.
Tal, shifting gears slightly, there's been a bit of reporting in Australia recently about Nazi homeschooling. You've written extensively about homeschooling in the American context. Could you tell us a little bit about how the right uses homeschooling and why they're so afraid of going to school?
So I don't know. I'll preface this by saying I don't know anything about Australian homeschool law. If you wanted me to be an expert on that, you would have had to give me a little bit of a heads up. I know a lot about U.S. homeschool law, which is essentially there isn't much of any. It's a real Wild West here where it's all you have to do. And in most states is just be like, well, I'm taking my kid out of school to homeschool them. And maybe the state will check up on you and maybe they won't. It's really terrifying. There's almost no checks and balances at all in most states here. So there is a Nazi homeschool movement in the US as well, but the much more sort of widespread movement is Christian fundamentalist homeschooling. So why does the far right hate school? The easiest answer is that public school is where you get shown people who don't look like you. You get exposed to ideologies that aren't the ones you learned at home. It automatically challenges the kind of homogeneity of far-right ideology just by virtue of confronting your kids with things they might not see at home. So that's one aspect of it. The other piece, and this is something that I dove really deep into in my book, Wild Faith, is that if you want to control your child and their environment, you know, you cannot do that as effectively if your child is surrounded by figures external to the family. In the US, and again, I don't know much about Australian law, we have what's called mandatory reporters. Teachers, school nurses, and other figures in authority have a legal requirement to report signs of child abuse, malnutrition, bruising, that sort of thing, to the police. So if you want to beat your child, whether that's a religious or theological reason for that, as many evangelical Christians firmly believe in corporal punishment and have real, you read these child-rearing manuals and just your heart goes out for these kids. It's awful and it's really endemic in the U.S., the easiest way to raise your child like that without worrying about getting in legal jeopardy is to isolate your kid and keep them away from mandatory reporters. That's a dark answer, and I don't know if every Nazi parent is beating the crap out of their kid. It wouldn't shock me. But yeah, everyone knows that abusers isolate their victims, and that's just as true in the case of child abuse as it is in cases of domestic violence. So it's that duality. It's isolating the child so that any abuse that you enact will go unwitnessed, and also keeping their information environment controlled, where they won't see kids of different races, kids who are trans, kids who are gay, but also so that no one at school will be, whoa, it's messed up what your parents are teaching you. It's that fear that the ideology will be vulnerable to challenge from outside.
Tal, in Victoria, the education department is going to undertake a periodic review, a 10-year review in 2027. I'm wondering if you have views on what sorts of principles should guide the regulation of homeschooling. Is it possible to create a safe environment for children to learn from home?
Listen, my opposition to homeschooling isn't absolute. I think there are absolutely kids who, for whatever reason, in many cases it's disability or learning disabilities that may cause it to be very difficult to be in a big chaotic environment. There are definitely kids who can benefit from homeschooling, but I think you simply cannot have safe homeschooling without a certain degree of regulation. Because the other thing that can happen, and that I spoke to many people who had undergone Christian homeschooling, and one of the things they really talked about too was not just abuse, physical abuse, which certainly happened, which many of them unfortunately experienced, and that's awful. But the other piece of it was that many of them experienced severe educational neglect. They simply had not learned as much as their peers. They did not have outside references. They had real difficulty adapting and surviving outside these closed communities because they had been very intentionally kept away from knowledge that would help them. So it's that kind of abuse that I would like to see addressed, in addition to, of course, making sure that kids are physically safe. I think without making sure that kids are being rigorously and fairly educated to the same standards as their peers, and also are physically safe, and also are, yeah, just being, are not being abused and not being radicalized instead of being educated. There have to be standards that are being kept to. There have to be also safeguards on kids' physical safety. And I think without that, it actually is impossible to have safe and successful homeschooling. It's not that I think parents can't be trusted or parents shouldn't have the right to educate their kids. And in America, we have this disease where everything has to be spoken of in terms of rights, even though that doesn't necessarily make sense. But yeah, you'll most often see kind of radical homeschool parents here talk about all of this stuff in terms of quote unquote parents' rights. And I think you have to make sure that whatever rights a parent has, they're not coming in at the expense of the right of the child to physical safety, to be educated on the same level as their peers, to be able to live and flourish and have the tools they'll need to cope with the broader world. Those are the minimum requirements, I think, that we need to have in place in order for homeschooling to be both successful for children and as well as being what parents might want. Because it is not fair that a child should suffer because of their parents' fears, inadequacies, or bigotries, or that abusers should be given free rein in the name of parental rights. Yeah, that's my long-winded response to your very simple question. It's a topic I feel passionately about after talking to so many survivors of child abuse.
Tal, just finally, in July of 2024, the Australian government created a new role, the Special Envoy to Combat Anti-Semitism. They've produced a report and made various recommendations about how to go about doing so, but I wonder if you were to be appointed to that role, in terms of combating anti-Semitism, what do you think are the most useful ways of approaching that struggle?
Ooh.
It's a big question, I know.
I don't think that I would ever want that job, mostly because I'd have to answer annoying questions all the time. Not yours, but just, I mean, a lot of people just have never met a Jew. We're a very small minority in the world. There aren't a lot of us, so you wind up having to answer a lot of questions about, what is a Jew? How do I treat one? Which is understandable. People talk about us so much, you'd think that there would be a lot more of us than there are, but no. I think for me, actually, even though I am Jewish, reading a whole lot for both books I wrote and then for my own education, reading a lot about the history of anti-Semitism and the role it has played societally, the function it has in neo-Nazi movements and far-right movements in European history, all of that, I think that's been the most useful tool for me in terms of, okay, fine, some hate is irrational. Most hate is rooted in something other than logic. But one thing, anti-Semitism is unique in some ways in that it has very often served very concrete social roles. In neo-Nazi movements, it creates movement cohesion. It gives this sense of, even though we're white men, we're actually victims of this incredibly powerful enemy that's just really sneaky. So here's why we're right and justified in everything we do, right? European leaders very deliberately used anti-Semitism as a buffer between them and the peasantry. Often in Poland in particular, Jews were barred from every profession except tax collecting and money lending. And then physically, the ghetto would be positioned between where the peasants lived and where the leader lived. Go get them, not us. And that kind of physical positioning, emblematic of the role that Jews could play as the sort of escape valve for social pressure. In the Middle East, you have Jews being positioned as the Eminence Grise behind these Western imperial shenanigans. So there are a lot of utilities for anti-Semitism. And so I think the most effective way of educating people, which is also a way of teaching people how propaganda works in general and how hate can be used to leverage to take the bite off general popular dissent and funnel it towards minorities, which is a useful lesson in every way. I would suggest teaching people about the history and usage of anti-Semitism and what it looks like, what it has looked like, what it does look like. That's how I would go about it. But I'm also a weird nerd, so I don't know. Don't put me in any popular positions.
I've got some good news for you, and I think you've got the job.
Oh, no. But I would like to leave the United States and go to Australia, where gun violence is rare enough to make the news. Whereas we had 5 mass shootings this weekend. It sucked. Anyway, sorry. But thank you so much for having me on. I really hope I was able to bring something to the table in this discussion. And it's lovely to be back. Same person, new gender. What's up? Take care and thank you so much.
You too, Tal. If people want to find you online, they can get you on Blue Sky at Swords Jew.
Yeah. I have Swords Jew. And I also have a newsletter, The Sword and the Sandwich. It's on Button Down because I left Substack because they're like, we love Nazis. And I was like, okay, time for me to skedaddle. So yeah, I do that. And yeah, and you can find my books wherever books are sold. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Thank you, Tal.
Andy, that is our program. We will not be back next week. We will be back next year, barring the end of fascism, which I've got a feeling we don't have to worry about. So we will be back in 2026, mid-January. See you then.
And of course, thanks very much to our listeners and supporters for listening to the program during the year. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have feedback, feel free to contact us with your comments and concerns. Otherwise, yes, we'll see you next year.
And thank you to all of the guests who came on throughout the year. Andy didn't thank you, but I will thank you. All right. Then, see you later.
Bye.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress. The tower at 12 Holland Court, Flemington, has become a Homes Victoria work site, while the families still living in the building are being treated appallingly. Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents. Weekdays 7 to 9am and 4:30 to 6:30pm as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided or bring your own. There's power in numbers, so see you out on Racecourse Road at the front of 12 Holland Court, Flemington, 7 to 9am or 4:30 to 6:30pm. Check Save Public Housing Instagram page for weekly updates. Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.